Matthew Scully's been a vegetarian for 28 years. He's had plenty of time to contemplate a meatless existence. Scully is also a speechwriter for George W. Bush and the author of a book called Dominion, The Power of Man, The Suffering of Animals, and The Call to Mercy. Michael Pollan is a writer. His most recent book is called The Botany of Desire. Pollan examined the ethics of meat eating in an article for The New York Times Magazine called An Animal's Place. Steve Paulson reached both of them by phone. He asked Michael Pollan if eating meat was still a moral thing to do.
You know, the more any of us look at the way we treat animals in this society, especially on factory farms, and Matthew's book is as good a way as any to give yourself a window to that process, it's very hard to defend supporting the system. There is cruelty on just an unimaginable scale. And I spent a lot of time kind of exploring that and really trying to figure out whether I could defend my preference for meat. I mean, I like to eat meat. I've always eaten meat. For me, it's a pleasure of life, but like all pleasures, you have to weigh it against the costs. And the defense of meat eating I was able to work up for myself is incredibly narrow, which is that I can defend the eating of non-industrial meat. I mean, meat that has been usually raised by farmers I know or have some acquaintance with, or say in the case of beef, you know, grass-fed beef that hasn't been on feedlots, small farms, certified humane farms.
Let me talk a bit about factory farms. Matthew, you went and visited some of these places, didn't you?
I did. I took a stroll through a industrial confinement hog farm in South Carolina. Basically, a modern hog farm resembles a warehouse. Animals are basically confined to these grim little sheds and never leave except to be brought to slaughter. It's even worse for the sows, who are denied any kind of free movement, even a few inches this way or a few inches the other. They can't even turn around. They're covered with sores. They're lame. They're the picture of misery. And, you know, I'll tell you, walking through there, I see these creatures looking up at me, you know, those even able to do it, and it's a sorrowful, sorrowful thing to see.
And we know that that pigs are actually quite intelligent, probably right. as smart as dogs.
They are. They're very much comparable to dogs. But again, I think Michael would support this point. It is an abandonment of animal husbandry, of the standards that define a good farmer. A good farmer has at least a minimal regard for the well-being of his creatures, of the creatures in his care. He respects them as animals, nothing more, nothing less. And here, we just see animals treated as production units, just forced to bend to our will and their own needs completely disregarded.
And we're talking not just about a few factory farms. From what I understand, most of our meat that we find in supermarkets comes from these mega operations. I mean, whether we're talking about beef or pork or chickens or what have you, most
right.
of them come from factory farms.
Right. If I remember correctly, about 355,000 pigs are slaughtered every day in America. 95% of them, Michael might correct me on this, but it wouldn't be anything more than 90% of those pigs come from confinement factory farms.
Okay, well, let's talk about this, because you're both in agreement that factory farms are evil. Let's put that word out there. You're saying they are evil, they are inhumane, they should not exist the way they are right now. So let's talk about alternatives. And I guess part of the question is it ever okay to kill animals for meat? I mean, that's the fundamental dividing line here, I think. And I guess I'll tell you from personal experience, I mean, this is a question I've thought about over the years. And I guess I've always thought ethically, if you do eat meat, you should be willing to kill the animal yourself. I mean, you should be willing to look the animal in the eye before you slit its throat.
And witness the consequences of your action.
Do you both agree with that?
Well, I would say that, you know, whether you have to actually kill it yourself, which is something that I've had occasion to do recently, I don't know. But I think you do have a moral obligation to look at the process, to visit a factory farm, to look at the pictures, to just really understand where your food's coming from. I mean, I think this goes for everything we eat, that if you can't accept the moral and ethical choices and actions that have gone on to put food on your table, then there's something wrong. But whether you actually have to, you know, raise the knife yourself, I don't know. I don't know that that's absolutely necessary.
Michael, you're saying that you still do eat meat. You don't like factory farms. You try to avoid buying food, buying meat that comes from that kind of agribusiness. But there are certain cases where you think it's okay to
eat. Yeah, and these are kinds of farms that I've been to, and then I can live with the way that they're raising animals, and that on balance, these animals are better off having lived and died in these farms than never having lived at all.
Matthew, does that argument make sense?
Yeah, it makes a certain sense. When you step back from the question, it seems to me that eating meat, killing animals for meat, has always fallen into the moral category of the necessary evil. It's something that people never found particularly pleasant over ages of human experience, but were certain that they had to do. So the moral case for it depends almost entirely, if not entirely, on necessity. So you have to ask yourself, when the necessity passes away, you know, what's left? When you begin with a necessary evil and over time the necessity passes away, what are you left with? Well, I'm not saying it's the greatest evil in the world, but it's not something we'd consider particularly good, having to kill animals and subject them to suffering.
But can't you make both a historical argument and a biological argument for why it's okay for people to eat meat? I mean, we know in nature that animals in the wild are constantly killing each other. I mean, that's how many survive, is they eat other animals. Nature
is a bloody business. Alone in nature, human beings have conscience and the capacity to make moral choices. You know, it's like we're the only carnivore with a choice in the matter. And at a certain point, maybe now, we've actually come to a point in human experience where we have to make certain choices. We do so in the case of other animal products, for example, furs. People look at big, expensive furs and realize that they're a vanity, that it's unnecessary. And it's legitimate then and fair to ask, well, why trap or farm animals to kill them for fur if you don't have...
Michael, what's your take on this?
Well, I agree with Matthew to the extent that we do outgrow our needs, and the fact that other animals kill animals is not an adequate defense of our killing of animals. I'm not sure that we could have a truly sustainable food system without having animals be a part of it. And here's why, in a couple ways. I live, until recently anyway, in New England, a part of the country where it's very hard to grow row crops successfully. The weather's bad, the soil's terrible, it's too rocky. The best, most sustainable way to get food off of that land is by having the sunlight feed the grass and the grasses feed the animals, and we eat the ruminants who are eating the grass. And to the extent that a sustainable food supply will have to be local and shouldn't be shipping food all over the world, you know, if we want to have local food supplies in certain places, it's going to have to be an animal-based agriculture.
Why? Why can't you eat the vegetables rather than the animals?
Because in many places you can't grow enough of them. There are many places, hilly land, for example, rocky land, where pasturing and herding is the best way to get protein off of that land. You also, in a sustainable agriculture, need animals to recycle nutrients. You need their manure. So in the absence of an animal agriculture, I mean, you couldn't have organic agriculture without animals. You end up with a big, industrialized, chemically dependent agriculture. You also have to remember that even if we were all to switch to a vegan diet, many, many animals die in the production of vegetables on farms because of pesticides, because of tractors. Animals die when we eat. You know, that's not to excuse whatever we do with animals, but I think we have to recognize that this is part of the human condition, that as long as we're here, and certainly in the numbers we're in, animals are going to die so that we can live.
If we're going to eat, there's going to be killing, whether we eat animals or vegetables.
Yeah, and there always has been, and probably there always will be, and that sacrifice is part of the human condition. And the defense of meat eating I was able to work up for myself is incredibly narrow, which is that I can defend the eating of non-industrial meat. I mean, meat that has been usually raised by farmers I know or have some acquaintance with, or say in the case of beef, you know, grass-fed beef that hasn't been on feedlots, small farms, certified humane farms.
So Michael, you're saying that the real trade-off is, or you're suggesting it's okay to kill animals if you've done everything in your power to give them a good life.
Yes, yes. Domesticated animals for sure, and wild animals, it really depends on necessity and the case and whether there is an ecological reason to be doing it. But that domestication, you know, we think of it as this political relationship of repression or oppression, and it isn't that at all, of course. It took two species to enter into these relationships in the case of cattle and man or chickens and man, and it's a beautiful thing, these relationships, and they go back thousands of years, and they, on balance, have benefited both species. I mean, there are a lot more dogs than there are wolves at this point.
Yeah, but, you know, you have to be a little bit careful with the numerical argument that the more we use animals, the better, you know, the more we, in fact, serve their interest. When you say, for example, that, you know, they wouldn't exist but for us, because factory farming produces, brings many millions of animals to life. But it, of course, as you well know, it subjects them to unremitting misery. And there exactly is where you need that ethic of animal husbandry you're describing. They serve us, you know, they serve what we take to be the legitimate purposes of man. And in return, we treat them as animals and we show them some respect and some compassion.
Michael, how careful are you about where your meat comes from?
I'm very careful about it. You know, I actually tried to be a vegetarian for a period of time when I was researching the whole subject of meat and did a few months as a vegetarian to see how it was and see what I thought about it and see how much I missed meat. And I persuaded myself I could do it if I wanted to do it. It took an awful lot of chopping, as I remember, to make all these...
An awful lot of what?
Chopping. Chopping of vegetables and much more time in the kitchen. And you realize that part of our attachment to meat is mere convenience. It's just so simple to heat a piece of flesh and eat it compared to the work that goes into making a fine vegetarian meal. But I have found that there are a remarkable number of opportunities out there if someone is interested in eating morally or ethically defensible meat, and more now than there have been, and that the consumer, as Matthew's really suggesting, the consumer has enormous power in this process if he or she regards the definition of consumer in a more enlightened way than we're generally encouraged to in this economy.
But it gets complicated because it's one thing to find one or two farms, which you trust. You mm-hmm. have learned how they raise their meat. But then you go out to a restaurant and
right.
you want to order chicken or
and you know what?
Steak
I don't.
Or whatever.
And I don't, unless I'm at a restaurant that's actually, you know, describing the kind of chicken they have or the name of the farm. I mean, around here, you know, I live in Berkeley where, you know, you can get the address and the phone number of the farmer off the menu. I mean, all the information is there, but most places this isn't true. So, you know, it does mean eating a lot less meat. And I have to tell you that both morally and defensible and sustainable food is a lot more expensive right now. That factory farming is a pretty cheap way to produce a piece of pork. And for some reason, we're often not willing to make the to pay a little bit more for something that we should be able to feel a lot better about eating. But it is there, and you can get on the web and their websites. There's one called eatwild.com or the Eat Well Guide, where you can type in your zip code and what you care about, whether it's humane standards or organic standards or anything. And farms in your neighborhood will pop up, and you can go see for yourself. And I really encourage people to do that, to actually look with their own eyes at what they're eating and decide whether they can eat it. I think Matthew's absolutely right that if we just rely on individuals' own moral standards, no legal standard, no outward standard, people will make better choices. They just have to pay attention.
Michael Pollan and Matthew Scully spoke with Steve Paulson. Michael Pollan is the author of The Botany of Desire and the New York Times Magazine article, An Animal's Place. Matthew Scully is a speechwriter for President George W. Bush and the author of Dominion.